Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, and a special episode today marking 78 years since the start of the Battle of Okinawa, the last major land battle of World War II in the Pacific. Another young American who experienced the intensity of Okinawa firsthand was a Marine carrying the nickname Pluto, Glenn Bram.
We landed there on Easter Sunday, April Fool's Day. It was, April the 1st. I was on there a month and a half before I finally got hit. I think I got hit May the 14th.
Wow. That is a long time. So what were you doing for that month and a half?
Gone, moving up in battles. One day you'd run into trouble, then you'd go 3 or 4 days and nothing would happen. Then you'd move up a little further and run into some more opposition.
What was the hardest thing for you to deal with, or maybe the most terrifying part of the whole experience for you?
Well, it was all terrifying. but remember they wanted, just 3 days before I got shot, they wanted to send me home to go to officer's candidate school. They said they'd ship me out right now. And I says, no, after this was over, I'd be coming home anyway, because after 4 campaigns, they automatically sent you home. And then, so 3 days later, then I got shot.
And this is quite a story. And, you know, you come back and you marry Muriel and you would have 5 children. Now there's 15 grandkids and 32 great-grandkids. And this always amazes me. None of those people would be here if your rifle hadn't jammed. That's crazy.
That's what my kids keep telling me.
Tell me what happened. Your rifle jammed?
Yeah.
Where was the situation? Where were you and what was going on?
They had sent 2 squads of us in. There was some of the guys, another outfit, were trapped in this little valley. And they sent us in. And we could see them getting picked off down there. So I said, I won't take my squad down. It was just then it says, Pluto, get ready, you're going down there. So you have to do it. So they sent a tank in with us. So we were behind the tank going up this little valley. And a mortar shell came in and hit right on the turret of the tank and put that out of commission. So I was right behind it. And when my rifle jammed, I bent over to fix it. And just then it felt like somebody hit me with their fist in the shoulder. And I looked, blood blowing all over, so I knew what happened. So about that time, everybody was getting hit. In fact, the other squad leader got hit with the same bullet that I got hit with. When it exploded, a chunk of it broke his arm.
Wow.
And right after that, we had this one platoon sergeant that was with us. He sent me a picture of himself after he got home. He got hit right through the mouth. It looked like a dimple on each side. It didn't hit a tooth or his tongue or anything.
Wow, what are the odds of that?
And that all happened just within a few minutes. And finally they sent smoke shells in and told us to go back. So you couldn't see anything from here to you, always getting out of that smoke. So we headed back, and I jumped in a shell hole because I got grazed in the arm, but just out of the smoke, a bullet hit me in the arm and it hit my cartridge belt. And then I dove in the shell hole, and I dove in on my right side because this one was hurt, and I broke 2 ribs, which I didn't know till afterwards, but I broke 2 ribs, and there were 2 guys in the hole, and they were 2 of the ones that we had gone in to try to get out, and they poured sulfa in my shoulder and everything and helped me get up to the top of the ridge, and then they took me back to the medical center then. But by that time, I had lost a lot of blood. I don't know how many pints of blood they gave me.
Yeah.
But I was still able to walk.
Well, I want to hear more about that, but I want to underscore for people, because they might be saying, well, wait a second. You said if his rifle hadn't jammed, he wouldn't be here. Well, the implication is if you're not bending over to fix that rifle, you're standing up and the shell hits you where?
It would right in the back or the shoulder. I mean,
it would have just blown you in half.
Oh, yeah. Because I still get pieces that work out, like little pimples coming. I've got, I don't know how many pieces still in my neck.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. But it would have killed you. There's no question.
Oh, yeah,
you
wouldn't absolutely be here. Oh, that's right.
So it's a good thing that rifle jammed. But then, so now your shoulder's blown to bits. You dive in the hole. You crack 2 ribs. You can still walk, but you've lost all this blood. I mean, you've got to be just out of your mind. I can't imagine what was going on.
Yeah. Well, I was just happy to get back to the aid station anyway, and then they worked on me. I can remember the doctor asking me if I wanted to save some of those pieces coming out. I could hear him as he was dropping them in a can. I said, no, I don't want them. I did say, is this going to be enough to get me home? He says, it will. Don't worry about it.
Wow. How long of a process was that for you to recover?
Well, I was, I got hit May the 14th. I got home June the 14th. I'd been in the hospital in Guam for a week and then in Pearl Harbor for another couple of weeks. And then I was in the hospital at Pleasanton for a couple of weeks afterwards. But after that, I was able to take care of it myself. But it was such a hole, they couldn't stitch it. They had to use clamps to clamp it together because the stitches kept popping. So it left a pretty good hole.
And I imagine your parents found out when you got hit. They probably got a telegram or something?
They didn't. I wrote and told them that I'd gotten hit and I was coming home, so don't worry about me. They didn't. I was home on a furlough when they got the information that I had gotten hit.
You mean you saw them before they knew that you were wounded?
Well, I told them I was wounded, but...
Okay, so you told them in person before letter actually arrived.
On a letter, I told them that I was wounded.
Yeah.
I did that when I was in Pearl Harbor.
Oh, I get it. Okay. This might be a tough one to answer because I get the sense that there's not a lot that slows you down. But there's got to be some kind of lasting impact of an injury that severe that basically blows off the top of your left shoulder.
Well, I can't raise my arm too high. I mean, that.
Yeah.
When I got discharged, they said, do you want to stay around for a medical discharge? And I said, how long will that take? Well, they don't know. I said, if I can get out now, I'll take it. I'll go now. So they did. They gave me a 20% disability. And I got that for about 2 years. And they called me up and said for another examination to see what it was. And they found out that I should have been getting 40% disability. So they gave me that. It was retroactive, which didn't amount to too much, but it was still quite a bit. So I've been getting that ever since. But I think if I would have stuck around for a medical discharge, I probably could have gotten 50%.
And as far as the way it is today, or for all these years, have you had pain or it's just kind of limited mobility?
Just limited, but yeah. It bothers my golf swing. I don't have any backswing at all. They tied the tendons too tight, so that's why I can't raise my arm too high.
Uh-huh.
But it doesn't bother me that bad.
So you were already home when Japan surrendered.
Yeah, I was home on a furlough.
What was that like for you after you've been at some pretty significant battles against these guys.
Well, I remember my cousin and I went deer hunting. As soon as it was over, we took off, went up to the ranch deer hunting for the weekend. Everybody was celebrating in town, and we went off by ourselves deer hunting.
How much have you told your kids and grandkids and great-grandkids about this over the years?
Very little. I mean, once in a while they'll ask me questions and I'll tell them something, but I just never cared to even talk about it, really.
You're glad to get home and didn't need to live in the past.
That's
huh?
Right, yeah. I worked for the Gilroy Lumber Company about 25 years. I retired when I was 55. I had a stroke. Some friends and I were fishing in Idaho, and I had a stroke there. I was in intensive care for a few days, and finally my wife and one of my sons came up, and a son-in-law took a motor home and picked me up and brought me home. But they wondered what caused the stroke. They gave me all kinds of tests when I got home. Just about 2 weeks before I left to go fishing, the doctor cut a piece of shrapnel out of my neck. And when he was cutting, I could feel it clicking in there on my windpipe. I says, that clicking my wind? No, he says, don't worry about it. He says, there's a lot of things more important than that. He says, it's right on the carotid artery. And I think that's what happened when a chunk of something got in that carotid artery afterwards.
Sure.
What caused it.
And you still have pieces of that shrapnel in there.
Yeah.
About how often does one of them work its way to the surface?
Oh, every... 6 or 8 months a piece will come out. In fact, my wife pulled one out some years ago. It was just like a little fish hook. And she pulled it out, and it had about an inch piece of my jacket still hanging on the piece of shrapnel.
Your jacket had been under your skin for all those years?
Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy. When you think back on that time, and obviously this is a lot of nights spent in foxholes, a lot of days in combat, a lot of close calls, that closest call we just heard about. But what are the things that today maybe you still think about and say, you know, somebody was really looking out for me there, or I'm really proud of how I handled that there?
Well, it's a sense somebody was looking out for me, that's for sure. As far as handling things, the one thing that started me off right when I first went overseas, we went to Wellington, New Zealand, for replacements for the 2nd Division after Guadalcanal. So some of the guys that were on Guadalcanal were with us. We were getting ready to go to Tarawa. And this one sergeant told me, he says, when you land, make sure you don't go out. When they drop the ramp down, don't go out, go over the side of the boat. He says, if they have a machine gun trained on that ramp, it'll get everybody. So he says, go over the side. Mm. Well, I did. I didn't know how deep the water was, and I couldn't swim. But anyway, it was only up over my chest a little bit. But I remember that's something that probably helped me, just what he told me there.
Sure. You know, I'm glad you brought that up, because that was the question I was going to ask you that I forgot, with not being able to swim.
Yeah.
Was there ever a point during your time in the service where you thought that was going to be your undoing, where you found yourself in a situation?
I thought that might have been, but I was lucky enough. We were in close enough. In fact, I came in under a pier, but some of the ones behind me, they just drowned right there.
What are you most proud of?
I'm just proud to be a Marine, I guess. That's for sure. I mean, it was a good outfit.
Do you have some pride based on what 16 million Americans in the armed forces and all the people back at home supporting them, what you were able to accomplish?
What bothers me are the ones that came back from Vietnam and Korea with the treatment they got. I didn't think that was right. I mean, we didn't get treated that way when we got home. We got treated as heroes, which the heroes are the dead ones, really.
More than 12,000 Americans gave their lives on Okinawa during World War II, a battle that began 78 years ago this weekend. It's time for our final break, but when we come back, another Okinawa Marine shares his experiences in battle as well as an unforgettable encounter that would stir emotions for the rest of his life. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. Over 1,500 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.